From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection for this hour was made in 1973. Herbert Boyer and Stanley Cohen became the first scientists to conduct genetic engineering successfully, transferring DNA from one organism to another. In 1976, the technology to do so was commercialized, and companies have been producing genetically modified food and medicines ever since. The process involves mutating or deleting or adding genetic material. When genetic material from a different species is added, the DNA is called recombinant DNA, and the organism is called a transgenic organism. Well, these days, the focus is on genetically modified organisms in our food supply. Vermont passed a new law this year requiring labels that tell consumers if a food has been genetically modified, and they are already being sued by the Grocery Manufacturers Association. New York State considered a similar law in this recent session. The bill did not go through, and there's strong interest on both sides and a lot of money being spent. We'd like to have a productive conversation about what GMOs are and are not in this hour. We've invited guests from multiple associations to join us, and we're going to be reading from the list of New York grower associations that oppose GMO labeling, looking at the economic impact as well. But let's welcome our panel now. We've got Jane Andrews, Wegmans Nutrition and Product Labeling Manager. Jane, nice to see you.
Hi, Evan.
Elizabeth Henderson's here. She is with Peacework Organic Farm in Newark. Nice to see you.
Good afternoon.
And on the phone with us is Rick Zimmerman, the Executive Director of the Northeast Agribusiness Feed Alliance, formerly of the New York Farm Bureau. Rick, thanks for taking the time.
Hi, Evan.
Let's start with Jane, because Wegmans made a bit of news recently by jumping into the question of GMOs and the question of labeling. And I want to start, Jane, by just with a discussion on what GMOs are, because I'm sure that's one of the common questions you get, isn't it? You know, what are these things?
What are organisms?
Yeah.
Do you want organisms in your food? Well, food is organisms. That is, it's living. In the case of animals breathing or plants, they are alive. And so when we say genetically modified organisms, they are living things that have been changed by man's input. It wouldn't happen naturally. And as you described well, it is using science to add features to a plant or an animal that are different than what would have been there before. So it has become very popular with some segments of agricultural industry, so that with five different crops, I think we're at, 85-90% of the corn, soybeans, canola, cotton, and sugar beets. And those ingredients, they become ingredients that become our food, especially processed food. So it's there. It has been for the past 20 years. You've been eating it.
Yeah, it's
you wouldn't have known the difference.
Yeah, it's nothing new. It's nothing new. But Rick, what was the promise, and what is the promise of GMO? What is the reason for doing it?
Well, let me clarify one term there with regard to GMO. Genetically modified organisms is the general term we're talking about. And even though Boyer and Cohen are recognized as being the pioneers in the concept of genetic engineering, we have been modifying our food for thousands of years. We've been genetically modifying our food. Humankind has been involved in genetic modification ever since we stopped being hunters and gatherers and started figuring out that we could farm. We've always selected for the best, the brightest, the highest yielding, the most tasty, you name it. That's genetic modification. And we've gotten better at it over the years, over the centuries. Genetic engineering is a step in the evolutionary process of being able to select for what society needs and do it much more precisely today than we've ever been able to do in the past. Genetic modification is a scenario where you want to change the traits of a food, a plant, and even an animal so that it suits what our needs are. When we were able to understand the genetic code and figure out that the building blocks of the genetic code are universal in nature between plant and animal, between human and plant, the genetic engineering concept became much more precise, and Boyer and Cohen understood what was going on here, and they've been able to, as pioneers, develop a part of biology, now this genetic biotechnology that allows us to be very precise in the decisions that we make to modify plant and animal. That's a technical thing. It's complex. It's not the same as hybridization, I grant that, but it is certainly part of the scenario that we've been evolving through for thousands of years.
All right, so what's the promise of GMO? What's the reason for doing it?
Higher yields, more nutritious plants, plants that are resistant to pests, so we can reduce pesticide use on farms. Developing products that will serve human populations, such as those countries who have individuals that are deficient in vitamin A. We can provide plants and product that will, through their level of beta carotene, provide humans with the ability to produce vitamin A so that they don't go blind or even die. We're just scratching the surface of opportunity for the future, and it's all to serve mankind. We'll be able to grow crops where the soil is too salty today. We are able to grow crops where the soil is too dry today. And as climate changes, we have to evolve and anticipate the needs.
All right, let me jump in, Rick, because you give us a lot there, and I know Elizabeth is just chomping at the bit to jump in. Now, hold on for a second there, Elizabeth. A couple of points that Rick just made I want to kind of go over. Everything that I've seen indicates that we do not see the evidence that yields have increased with GMO, though I don't know. I'm open to new evidence, but all of these promises you're talking about, let's start with yields. Are GMOs successfully increasing yields?
Oh, absolutely. The corn and soybean plant today in New York State will yield almost twice as what it did a decade ago.
What about nutrition?
But so will European hybrids that are not GMO.
Okay, hold on. And we are going to, Elizabeth, you are going to have plenty of time to jump in here. But let me go down the list here. Nutrition. Is nutrition better with GMO?
I just mentioned the vitamin A deficiency issue that we have on a worldwide basis.
All right, Jane, go ahead.
That's a promise of GMO that has not yet been delivered. It's possible, but it hasn't made it to commercial availability yet. So I always, when folks talk about nutrition benefits of GMO, I'm a little bit taken aback because I think it really is, and that's one of the problems with GMOs, is that they are beneficial to farmers and to reducing the cost of food, but not direct benefits to consumers yet, like nutrition.
That hasn't happened.
Will you agree with that? Yes, okay.
Yeah, I would, and particularly in our society where we have such a plethora of wonderfully nutritious products.
Yeah,
but underdeveloped countries where they don't even have enough food or the proper food for addressing vitamin A, then that is, I think, still a very good example.
It's a great example of hope, but it's not there yet.
One of the great ironies of all this,
go ahead, Elizabeth,
is that the weeds that have become resistant to Roundup, Palmer amaranth, which is a kind of red root pigweed, have more vitamin A than the rice that is genetically engineered to have vitamin A in it. So if those herbicides weren't used, children and poor people could gather the weeds from the field and eat them and get a lot more vitamin A.
Rick, when it comes to herbicides, you talked about resistance to disease, but that sort of makes some people a little nervous that you're talking about what seems like a loop, that you've got these crops that are resistant, but then
Disease resistance is an issue that farmers have to deal with, whether they're using GMO crops or growing organically. It's a matter of management to be able to avoid the mutations that occur in the environment that allows for weeds to become resistant to different types of herbicides. The good news is Roundup, which is glyphosate, which is used around homes. You know, you see the television commercials of the guy spraying his Roundup between the cracks on the sidewalk. That's the same product that's being used in fields today, which is much safer, much more environmentally benign than many of the old pesticides that we used to use years ago. And even though there is Roundup being used today, the impact of Roundup in our environment is much, much less of an issue than some of the old products that have been abandoned in the past. And so it's a good news scenario as far as being able to grow crops that are resistant to pests, even though Roundup application rates are going up, as being cited by those that are supportive of labeling. So it's a matter of understanding the details of what's going on out in the field, and I think that we have a much healthier environment as a result of GMO crops today than what we had before.
All right, Elizabeth Henderson from Peacework Farm in Newark. He's talking about the fact that, hey, these pesticides are not what they were decades ago, and that this is a great advance. What do you say to that?
Well, in this country, we don't have a lot of evidence about the danger of the actual GMO cultivars because studies have not been done. In Europe and in other countries, they have done studies, and in 64 countries, GMOs are labeled or banned completely because people are nervous about what they might do. What Rick said about using Roundup Ready corn and soybean, which is now used on 160 million acres of the 361 million acres that are under cultivation in this country. So they're everywhere. The glyphosate that is used on them has been used over and over again. And of course, weeds become resistant to it. So now the farmers who have been using Roundup are starting to use 2,4-D and the other more poisonous pesticides. And USDA and FDA are considering allowing genetically modified corn and soy, which will be 2,4-D resistant. And a much simpler way to deal with that is just to cultivate the way we do on organic farms to get rid of those weeds.
Why not cultivate the way they do on organic farms, Rick?
Bottom line is cost, Evan. Cost and yield. It's always an economic issue when we talk about agricultural practices. And by the way, when we talk about GMOs and we're talking about an agricultural practice, we're not talking about a nutritional difference in the foods that are derived from GMO crops. But it's a matter of being able to feed the world with 9 billion people coming at us by 2050, and with regard to our reducing land mass worldwide, we have to have all the tools in our toolbox to be able to effectively provide good nutrition to a growing population. And a population, by the way, on a worldwide basis that is growing up the economic ladder, too. So as more and more people have the economic means to afford better foods, then the demand increases for more complex foods, which has a direct impact upon the types of foods that we raise.
All right, hold on. Let's
we
get.
We can't do it organically.
Elizabeth, short response to that, and then I want to jump back. We're going to get to the phones. We have a lot to get to on GMOs, but Elizabeth, go ahead.
According to the UN Rapporteur on Food and Hunger, the best way to solve world hunger is to develop organic farming for the 70% of the people who are eating on small farms all over the world. If GMO foods could solve hunger, they could have done it by now. There are more people who are suffering from hunger and malnutrition in this state and around the world now than when GMOs were first introduced.
But population is certainly increasing. I mean, the equation, I'm not saying I have an easy answer, Elizabeth, but our population is going to only increase on this
point. The supply of food right now on the planet would be enough to feed everybody. The reason for hunger has nothing to do with how the food is produced. It has to do with the inequality in the distribution of resources and money.
Okay, now let me read here real briefly. Just so you're aware of where things are with GMO labeling, Vermont is the state that's kind of out in front in terms of forcing labeling. They passed a law earlier this year, and they're already being sued. They anticipate about $8 million in legal bills. They said they knew that was coming, mm-hmm. And they're dealing with it. New York State had a bill in the legislature that did not pass, and you might have seen articles. There's a lot of money being spent on that bill trying to make sure. It did not pass, and it didn't, and there is a lot of opposition to it. Let me read the organizations that sent a memorandum of opposition opposing GMO labeling in New York State. You've got the Farm Bureau, the Biotechnology Industry Organization, Empire State, CAO, Inc., New York State Grange, the Northeast Ag and Feed Alliance, CY Farms and Batavia Turf, New York Corn and Soybean Growers Association, New York State Agribusiness Association, New York State Vegetable Growers Association, and the Northeast Dairy Producers Association. The letter that came from the Farm Bureau said, among other things, the following, quote, "Meat from an animal that is fed with corn derived from biotechnology would require labeling. This would hold true for many types of vegetable oil. In fact, the scope of this legislation to force labeling is so broad that virtually all products in a grocery store would require labeling." Jane, is that accurate?
Virtually all? No, that's not accurate. But many, many would require labeling, unless you source differently.
It's the processed foods that would have to be labeled, because something like, I don't know, 80 or 90% of the processed foods contain either corn or soybean derivatives of different kinds.
Canola, cottonseed,
but the way the New York State and Vermont legislation is written, it would not require the labeling of meat that had been fed GMO feed. It would only require the labeling of animals that were actually genetically engineered themselves.
Which currently there are none.
Okay. We're going to get to Gary on the phone in just a second, but let's also understand Wegmans' position, because I opened the hour and mentioned that Jane Andrews is here from Wegmans, the nutrition and product labeling manager. And a couple of months ago, there was a lot of buzz about the fact that Wegmans is talking more to customers about this. What is Wegmans' position on what you'd like to see done?
Well, customers were asking for our point of view, and they were calling asking, is this particular food created from genetically engineered ingredients? And we realized that consumers were very confused. They were asking about many products that have never been genetically engineered, not realizing the ones that had been. And so we felt strongly that we needed to come out and speak about it. We also felt strongly about continuing our approach to developing more certified organic products, because certified organic by regulation is prohibited. It cannot. A farmer could not knowingly choose a genetically modified seed or add any other genetically modified ingredient to an organic product. So we felt like we had a really great option, and we've been bringing more certified organic products into the store. At the same time, bringing in several different stakeholders, we had both sides of the industry come in and speak to us. We felt strongly that it is not a food safety issue. These ingredients are safe. And we needed to reassure customers that we believed that they were safe. And so as many supermarkets, we want to serve people that are interested in many different kinds of foods. And so we put that out there. And it did create quite a bit of a buzz, because people seemed to think that you had to be one or the other. You couldn't encourage all of these different forms of agriculture.
Yeah, so Wegman's saying that it's not that GMOs are unsafe, but
no, they're not
but
unsafe.
If you want to know what you're eating.
But if you want to know what you're eating, then
you
choose certified organic. Yeah. Or there's another program that's become very popular called the
non-GMO Project.
Project Verified. And so that has been an increasing number of products. Now, granted, many of those labels are on products that could not, blueberries cannot be GMO, and olive oil cannot be GMO. It's not that science has not been done yet. So there's a little bit of, I think, hype.
Marketing hype? Yeah.
There's a little bit of a lot of marketing hype, and people realize that gets a higher price for items if they put the non-GMO project label on there. But if there's only a few commodities, but they just happen to be some of the most popular crops across the nation. So it is, 70-80% of our cropland is planted in GMO.
But if you want more customer education, why not support the New York State bill that looks like the Vermont bill that says...
Because we think it is so confusing. If the non-GMO project says that the dairy animal cannot be fed. I mean, the non-GMO project has all of these restrictions. The enzymes that create lactose-free milk, for example, are GMOs. The enzymes that create your cheese are GMOs. The yeast that is put in bread are GMOs. Across the industry, all of these ingredients, many vitamins are made from GMO bacteria. So there are some out there that's saying use that stricter definition, and then some of the states are saying, well, you can give RBST. For example, Vermont says you can give RBST to dairy cattle. RBST is a hormone created by GMO bacteria. So whose that definition am I supposed to look at? I'm speaking as a product labeler, and I'm providing food in 6 different states. And well, so is it New York, or is it Vermont, or is it the non-GMO project? We want a national standard. That is Wegmans' position, a national standard.
Elizabeth?
Well, I agree with you. And the Boxer-DeFazio bill, which is being proposed now, would certainly do that. But often in order to get a national piece of legislation like that passed, you have to have legislation passed in a number of states.
It's
to
a
get,
strategy.
Yes.
It's not a real world solution. It's a strategy, but
that's
it's
right.
very confusing.
It is a strategy. But I would really like to comment on the health of GMO foods. We don't know whether GMO foods are healthy or not, or whether one or two of them might be healthy or not, because they're only tested by the manufacturers.
Well, you've got to be.
Since,
don't
since
be
allow
misleading.
Me to finish, please.
Rick, you get the next word. But go ahead,
since
Elizabeth.
GMOs have been spread throughout our food system in this country over the past 20 years. There are more chronic diseases. There's more cancer. There's more autism. There's obesity.
But
there's
do you point directly?
Dysfunction.
You're pointing to GMOs.
There's greater infertility. No, we don't know.
You're saying we don't know. Okay.
So by labeling, you would know whether people had been eating GMOs mm-hmm. or not, and that would help to be able to do those health assessments.
Rick, go ahead.
Very misleading. The fact is that the GMO foods and the ingredients, the GMO ingredients, have been more tested, more thoroughly reviewed, more understood from a standpoint of allergenicity than organic foods have been. We know more about the nutrition, quality, and safety of GMO foods than we do organic foods today.
I'm not sure how you can possibly say that, because most of the organic foods are things that people have been eating for 2,000 years.
Okay.
Look, we have FDA involved in the whole review process. You say it's voluntary. In reality, it is mandatory, because food companies know full well that they will not get their product on a supermarket shelf unless there is approval from FDA. And that program has stood the test of time, and that's exactly why FDA has determined that the nutritional equivalent of GMO foods is the same
Rick,
as non-GMO.
Rick, the head of the FDA, the deputy commissioner of food for the FDA, Michael Taylor, was a former Monsanto VP. And President Obama, when he was a candidate in 2007, talked up GMO labeling, and then he got into the White House. And sorry to people who think this is a left-right issue, but he appoints the former Monsanto VP to the FDA. And so I'm not saying that there is a causal link, that the FDA gives a green light to all these things, Rick, but at the same time, there is a lot of cross-pollination in government and big industry, isn't there?
And if
well, hold on.
If GMOs
hold on. Elizabeth, hold on. Go
okay.
ahead, Rick.
This issue, as far as FDA's position on food, occurred long before Michael Taylor and Barack Obama. This is not a new revelation on their part. This has been tried and true, and established for a long, long time. I can't speak to, don't have any perspective with regard to Mr. Obama's appointments to the various agencies.
Okay.
Well, it was actually Michael Taylor who, before Obama's was the person at FDA who made that decision that GMOs are basically the same. But
also,
when those companies go to get patents, they make the argument that they are novel and different enough to be awarded a patent. So are they novel or are they the same?
Well, you're confused. You're apples and oranges now, Liz.
No, it is you, my friend, who is apples and oranges here.
Well, what kind of apples?
Don't forget about citrus greening.
Yeah, right. Are they GMO apples?
GMOs for citrus greening.
All right, I want to get our first call. I haven't even mentioned the phone number, and we've already had calls. And poor Gary has been waiting. Gary from Rochester, go ahead. Sorry, Gary. Thanks for taking the time. Go ahead.
Oh, no, it's a good conversation. I'm glad you have this on. But I would like to go back to what the program is supposed to be about, and that's labeling. And I appreciate the argument. There's merits on both sides, I'm sure, about the benefits and risks of GMOs. But on the other hand, I can't help but think that You know, I'm old enough to remember we didn't know it went in Twinkies. And the food industry told us that if they had a label for that, that they would go broke, and they didn't. If they had a label for trans fats, that they would go broke, and they didn't. And yeah. In regards to public education, I mean, no one knew really that how bad high fructose corn syrup was until it started to be, you know, emboldened on the labels. So my question is this is a capitalist system, free enterprise. I'm not clear, to get back to the labeling issue, what the objection is in the labeling. Let the consumers decide. Let the markets drive where we want to go. I mean, like organic, people decide they want to pay more, let them. If people want to pay more for GMO, well, so be it. Build it into your profit. And so my question becomes is, and what I haven't heard yet from anyone is, what kind of numbers are we talking about on increase of cost? We keep hearing increase of cost, but it's meaningless unless you tell me, is it a hundredth of a cent on a dollar?
No, hold on, Gary, hold that thought. First of all, stay there. Cornell did a study, and I know there's some dispute about the conclusions, but Cornell's conclusion, and I think I've got it here, hold on. I've got too many, this is just one of those hours where I'm just loaded here. Okay, Cornell suggests that if there is labeling law, and again, I keep looking at Vermont as sort of the model, if New York State has a GMO labeling law similar to that, that the average family could pay $500 more per year. Now, Elizabeth Henderson is going to tell me that you think the conclusion, you've read the study, you think that conclusion is, or at least the way that it's being reported, is misrepresenting the study.
That's
but at
right.
the same time, they're saying people will pay more in some degree, won't they?
There's actually no truth that they will pay more. Just changing the label might cost a dollar per family per year, and it might not even cost anything because companies change labels all the time.
Jane, you're shaking your head. Well,
the study says that if you have to stock both GMO and non-GMO, it would be more expensive. And if you were to substitute organic ingredients for all of the GMO ingredients, then it might cost $1,300 a year. But the labeling legislation does not cause that. What causes that would be the choice of companies to do that if it turns out that nobody will buy the GMO labels. And I believe that Mr. Zimmerman said that putting a GMO label on food would be like putting a skull and crossbones on it.
All right, Rick, is that how you feel, that a GMO label not only would sort of scare consumers and that costs would go up?
Well, we have consumer studies that indicate that's exactly what will happen. We also have the director of Organic Consumers Association, Mr. Ronnie Cummings, with a following quote, the burning question for us all becomes how and how quickly we can move healthy organic products from a 4.2% market niche to the dominant force in American food and farming. The first step is to change our labeling laws, close quote. So Mr. Cummings knows exactly what will happen to consumer perception or as a result of perception.
Shouldn't he want organic to be a dominant force? I'm missing the point on what's so wrong with wanting.
But doing it by scaring and making people think that other food is going to
Okay, it's going to be evil. Okay, okay. So
demonizing other food is the
question.
All
right, so I think what we're finding is GMOs has a bit of a public relations problem. And Rick, if what you're saying is not only are the yields better, it could help with global hunger, and it could be more nutritious. Again, absent some evidence on some of those things. But if you really feel that way, why don't you just win the public relations war? Why do you want to take labeling information away from consumers?
We want to give consumers sufficient enough information to be able to make an informed decision.
Don't you? But isn't it insulting them to think that you can't educate them?
If we are able to provide the information about what genetic engineering actually was and what this process actually does, and the fact that the food is not nutritionally different than the product next to it, and if you could do all that in one little label within a 5-second period of time that somebody glances at a product, then you would have something there, Evan. But you're never going to be able to do that. You're going to create a perception that this one product that is labeled as GMO, which is nutritionally the same as the other product, is in some shape or form deficient, inferior.
The food may be nutritionally the same, but the GMO food will have residues of the chemicals that are used on them and residues of glyphosate. And while there isn't much evidence,
will have residues of
question,
a product
please?
That you use.
All right. We hardly use anything.
Let me get back
certainly
to Gary.
Nothing is
let
toxic.
Me get back to Gary, who started this little tangent here with the phone call, and I know that Jane had wanted to weigh in on Gary's initial point, but Gary, you got the floor.
Thank you. And if I could just follow up on this, because I want to know the cost, and if it's in the study, fine. If it's not, fine. It's a question that hasn't been answered. And when you say $500 per family, that doesn't give me any relative or a scale to work with, because does that mean like a family of four that goes out for dinner once?
Family
of four.
Family of four.
But that would only be if the companies decided to stock both GMO label and non-GMO versions of every product.
Now,
how much it would cost.
I want Jane to weigh in. Go ahead, Jane.
Yeah, I think the thing that many people don't understand is that our current food system, these commodity products are, for the most part, refined. And somebody mentioned high fructose corn syrup. There's hundreds of ingredients made from corn, soy, sugar beets, cottonseed. For example, 40% of the granulated sugar that's sold on our shelves is not Wegmans brand, but 40% of it's sugar beet. So my point with all this is that unless you test at the grain elevator, you cannot test. There's no genetic material in these ingredients. So someone like me, in order to verify that the ingredient that I have was produced without genetic engineering, in other words, if I wanted it to be labeled by the non-GMO project, I have to have testing at the field practically, at the elevator, and then I have to segregate that all the way through. And that's where the cost increases, because most of these ingredients are exactly, you can't measure a difference when it gets down to the chocolate chip cookie. There's nothing there. But it was what seed the farmer chose in the field. And then it becomes highly refined. So that idea of creating a secondary food system, we already have another food system in that certified organic tests at the field, verification, documentation, all the way through the food system. Now we're going to need another food system that tests and verifies so that we end up having three. That's where the extra costs come in. Not as Elizabeth was talking about, putting words on a label. That's not where the cost is. And it ethically, I don't want to be selling something that I say is non-GMO when I don't know for sure that it's non-GMO. So that's also why I want to have clear definitions.
I'm running late here for a break, but what I want to do before the break here is, Rick, I'd like to read a comment. We've had a lot of comments online, and most of the comments we have, we ask the basic question, when you hear GMO, what do you think? And most people say confusion. To Jane's point, most people still are confused about it. So, but here's a comment from someone who's named Adam. And Rick, it's a little bit of a lengthy comment, but I'd like to go through it and then get your take if I could. Adam says, the issues related to GMOs can't be separated from a few significant issues that themselves are not directly about GMO crops. First, monocropping is bad in just about every way. Second, seed production policies that makes farmers essentially sharecroppers for seed companies are terrible. These two issues are huge and intimately connected with policies regarding GMO crops. He writes, there is a difference between indirectly selecting for genetic changing by choosing phenotype characters in plants and directly modifying the genome of plants to produce a desired phenotypic outcome. I am not of the view that the latter is inherently bad, but I do get a little queasy thinking about seed companies that have created plants to, quote, naturally produce herbicides and pesticides that, by themselves, have never been products of nature. It is in this blurriness to GMOs that makes regulating them so tricky. In the absence of regulation, companies like Monsanto and DuPont pretty much have carte blanche to do what they want, given their control of the seed market. What do you think?
Well, regulation does exist. The Environmental Protection Agency gets involved when looking at a seed product when it has pesticidal capabilities. Farmers will always have choice in seed product that they buy. Monoculture is a challenge. It's a challenge as far as an organic operation is concerned. It's a challenge as far as a conventional farmer's operation is concerned. So we always have to be looking at crop rotations and using best agronomic practices. But farmers will always be able to choose between GMO seeds and non-GMO seeds. And that has that has been a misleading perspective with regard to some of the dialogue that we've had. And I appreciate the writer's, Adam's perspective and intellect in the understanding of what we're talking about as far as this technology is concerned.
Elizabeth, you shook your head a little bit there. Why do you disagree with what Rick just said?
Well, the monocropping issue, to be certified organic, you have to be rotating your crops. And even the biggest so-called industrialized organic farms do not have the kinds of monocrops that the farms I see around me in Wayne County, where their rotation is GMO corn, GMO soy, GMO corn, GMO soy, all Roundup ready. That's really not a rotation that's meaningful. And the caller, the commenter, is referring to the kind of control in the marketplace that has allowed the domination of the seed industry, so that in many parts of the country, farmers do not have the choice. The only seed that is available for corn or soy is the Roundup Ready.
Rick is saying that's wrong. Rick is saying they have a choice.
That's not true. The farmers that I speak to, and I regularly go and talk with them, say they could buy. They have to pay more for GMO seed, but they could certainly have non-GMO available. They don't like non-GMO, at least the ones I've talked to.
There is a shortage of non-GMO seed in this country, in many parts
wow.
of the country.
That's not what the farmers tell me.
Okay, if that's true, again, I don't. That's the hard part as the host. I don't know if that's true. Rick, I assume you dispute that.
I agree. I agree with Jane's perspective. Farmers do have good choice. They do have to pay more for the GMO seed. It's an active choice that they make because they see the benefits that it provides to them. But we have a huge educational need within our society to talk to all consumers about what this technology is about and why it's being used. And I realize that you mentioned that before, Evan, and I think that that's an area that we have to stay focused and dedicated to. We have to be transparent. We have to be very communicative about what we do and why we do what we do.
Rick, something else I've heard from grain farmers, and I'd appreciate it if you would comment. What they tell me is that the extra that they could get per bushel for non-GMO, the premium that they could get per bushel, does not pay for the cost of growing non-GMO. The fact that they've got to clean their equipment, that they, you know, they have to use different pesticides that are more expensive, that they have to use more fossil fuel, that the equipment, they've made so many changes in how they farm that they don't want to go back. Is that what you're hearing, or are you beginning to see more non-GMO available and farmers going that direction because they're getting good enough prices?
No, I don't think that we're seeing more non-GMO available, but that could change if the economic equation changes. That is, if the price, the premium that is,
I think the premium needs to go up, and that's where food costs begin to go up, because farmers are telling me they won't do it.
Yes, exactly right.
So they got to be paid more. That's where food will become more expensive.
But before we let Rick go, because we're going to switch over and talk to Michael Rosen of the Food Industry Alliance, before we do that, let's grab one more quick call, because I know Steve from Rochester wanted to talk about genetics and sources. Go ahead, Steve.
Yes, real quick. From Wegmans, she stated that she doesn't want to put non-GMO labels on packages because she doesn't know the products are non-GMO. Is that saying that you don't know where all your products are coming from in the background of them?
I'm not sure if I understood the question.
Yeah, I think it was for Jane, but I think... I'm not sure Jane said that.
I didn't say... I mean, what I said is that in order to put non-GMO on a product... just as we do with certified organic, I would have to have a documentation system on every ingredient to know that indeed that farmer planted a non-GMO sugar beet. I'm saying that in order to do that, I would have to have a specification management system that did all those. And we haven't created that yet. It's not in our specifications. In organic, it is, and that's why we've shifted to say to people, if you're concerned about this, certified organic has the documentation. Go with certified organic. So that's been our philosophy. For us, certified organic is the non-GMO choice. And we've been working hard to bring more certified organic at prices that people can afford.
Does that answer your question?
Well, as an organic farmer
yeah.
who's
and also
hold on.
For Rick,
go ahead, Steve.
My question would be, you said genetic modifying has been going on for thousands of years, and I would have to disagree with, well, I agree and disagree, because I believe that natural selection is the genetic modifying that we've been using for thousands of years, not in a lab, which is taking place now.
Yeah, I think I think that's correct, Rick. I mean, you can't really disagree with that, can you?
No, but the point is that our understanding of our genetic makeup today allows us to be in the laboratory and be able to make these very precise adjustments, and therefore be very, very clear and precise, as I said, with what we do today, rather than being very imprecise. It's like using a blunt instrument versus a scalpel. The past being a blunt instrument, a scalpel being where we are today with the technology.
Elizabeth, you wanted to comment about being an organic farmer in regards to what Jane said. Go ahead.
Well, I appreciate Jane saying that certified organic is a really good choice if you want to avoid GMOs. My farming has been certified organic since 1985, and Piecework is certified organic. But I think people want to know that foods have GMOs in them, and that's why I think the labeling is important.
But if people knew that it was going to cost $500 a year for a family of four...
But, Rick, you know that that is not what the study says.
No, I disagree with you, Elizabeth.
And you probably paid for it, didn't you?
And
you paid for the study.
Very articulate with regard to why it costs that much. But also, one thing that wasn't mentioned is the regulatory costs. $1.6 million a year for New York State to regulate this new food supply system that you're talking about. So that is in addition to the $500 per year for a family of four. And by the way, that's a conservative average price of $500.
All right, Rick Zimmerman is the executive director of the Northeast Agribusiness Feed Alliance, has been joining us. Rick, I got to let you go and get to a break because we're going to bring on Michael Rosen next, but thank you for taking the time and joining us in the program today.
Thank you for the opportunity.
Rick Zimmerman, also in studio, Jane Andrews from Wegmans, Elizabeth Henderson of Piecework Farm in Newark. Right back talking to the Food Industry Alliance next and more of your calls as we talk about GMOs on Connections. Tuesday on the next Connections, Fairport's own jazz star, VJ Iyer, will play four shows at the Jazz Fest this week. Some critics call him the most important jazz pianist alive today. He'll join us in studio for the first hour. Then we'll talk to representatives of the City of Rochester about the new benefits for transgender employees. What's the impact for the trans community? That's coming up Tuesday on Connections.
Support for your public radio station comes from our members and from the Niagara Wine Trail USA, 20 wineries starting in western Monroe County between Rochester and Niagara Falls, flanked by Lake Ontario and the Niagara Escarpment. Niagara Wine Trail, uncork a natural wonder. NiagaraWineTrail.org.
I'm Evan Dawson. Welcome back to Connections. Joined now by Michael Rosen, the president of the Food Industry Alliance. Michael, thank you for taking the time to join us. I know it's been this hour is flying by, but thanks for being there.
Well, thank you for having me, Evan.
I know you're well. Actually, let me back up and say, for our listeners who don't know exactly what the Food Industry Alliance does, tell us.
Evan, we are a statewide trade association of all sizes of grocery stores, of supermarkets, and I should mention that Wegmans is one of our members.
Okay, and you told me earlier when we spoke that you oppose GMO labeling or labeling in general when it comes to food from rules that come on the state level. You'd like to see a national standard. What's wrong with state labeling like we saw Vermont do? What would be wrong with New York State adopting labeling for GMOs?
Well, we think that state-specific labeling will lead to higher prices and fewer product selection for New York consumers. And that can come from a number of ways, but we currently have a national system of labeling. We think that's the best way to make products available in New York, and that's the system we should keep.
And if we saw a national bill on GMO labeling, you would say, okay.
That's the position of our board, that we're not scientists, but if USDA or Congress decided that there should be national labeling of products with a GMO ingredient, we're fine with that. Our problem is when you try to impose a national system of labeling at the state level.
Jane, you can speak a little bit to that, as Wegmans is one of the members here, and you've got stores in different states. That
right,
becomes a challenge?
That's exactly right. It would be a great challenge. And I think it's fair to say that we support a national standard for non-GMO labeling. We think consumers are looking for the product that does not, the consumers that are concerned are trying to avoid it, and so they need labels. Just as with gluten-free, they don't look for labels that have, you know, where's all the gluten. They want to know where the gluten-free is. They're looking for, if they're trying to avoid animal products, they're looking for the vegan label. And so that whole area of helping consumers find what they're looking for, we think there needs to be a national standard for that.
And I've got a comment from Kevin online asking about disease and problems that come from GMO. And I know, Jane,
right,
you wanted to talk about that.
Well, you know, many of our customers had been asking, especially the customers with celiac disease. There's been a concern that some of the activists have said that celiac disease is rising. At the same time, we've been past 20 years using GMOs, and there must be a connection. And so we've talked to some of the world's foremost experts in this, Dr. Fasano from Harvard, and said, what do you know about that? And Dr. Fasano disagreed that he said the rate of celiac disease in the United States is the same as around the world. It's about 1 in 100 that have diagnosed celiac disease. And part of the problem, the reason why it seems like it's increasing is because of the fad, lots of people going on gluten-free that don't really have celiac disease, but also because it was underdiagnosed. Over the weekend, I was in Boston at a meeting and had a chance to talk to Walt Willett. Walt is a foremost nutritionist, epidemiologist at Harvard University School of Public Health. And someone else asked a question about GMO, and I asked, as an epidemiologist, have we seen different rates of diseases in those countries that do not use GMO compared to the United States, where it's pervasive? And he said, oh, no, you can't see a difference like that. There's not anything that would make us think that this is happening. For one thing, there's so many other differences between countries, different healthcare systems, et cetera. Smoking is much higher in Europe, so they have much higher rates of cancer than we do. We have more obesity, but they're catching up with us. So those things are more important, smoking cigarette, than this ever would be. So we don't have any reason, even after 20 years of this being pervasive, to see a health differences.
Okay. Well, and Elizabeth, at a recent rally talking about GMO, you said that, you know, if you eat cereal, then you're a guinea pig in an experiment. And is that the kind of language that makes people scared of GMOs unnecessarily?
Well, I think people have good reason to be nervous about eating GMOs and about eating a lot of the conventional foods that have chemical residues in them. But with GMOs, it's particularly the residues of glyphosate. Roundup has its main ingredient, glyphosate. It's an endocrine disruptor. It has many other serious health effects. And as a farmer, I'm particularly concerned at what glyphosate does to the soil. It breaks down fungi mm-hmm. that are naturally in the soil, and it selects for fungi that tend to be more pathogenic. So in GMO crops, there are more mycotoxins. Mycotoxins are very poisonous to crops, to livestock, and to people who might come in contact with them. And we're starting now to see a recurrence of the Dust Bowl. Well, the BT... GMO crops. The BT in the soil selects for the less gooey fungi that help hold the soil together. So by growing crops over and over again where they use glyphosate, it's destroying the structure of the soil and having effects of that kind.
All right, so we're talking about glyphosate affecting the soil, but also you're concerned about affecting human beings and our health. And Jane said you've looked into the health effects. Are you concerned about glyphosate?
EPA doubled the limit that's allowed in our bloodstream. One is tracing it.
What do you think, Jane?
Well, again, I'm not an agronomist, and I, from what I've understood, and I use, I hate to say it, but I use Roundup because it works sometimes on my, you know, where I have some weeds in my sidewalk. But what I've understood is that it is the least toxic of all weed killers. I think Elizabeth has some wonderful, absolutely correct comments, though. We are seeing some weeds become resistant.
Super weeds.
Well, they're not going to grow any faster than any other weed unless you spray Roundup
like
on it.
But the super bugs that we talk about in terms of
you have to spray Roundup on it. But if you're using Roundup and those weeds, then you're going to have to come up with a higher intensity. But Roundup has a very low half-life. I grew up on a farm. My dad used this crop, loved it because of all the other advantages.
Yeah.
He could use far less pesticides and herbicides.
All right, last quick word, Michael Rosen. I only got about 30 seconds left here. What do you think is coming when it comes to labeling, and what do you make of the debate here? Are you at least content to see New York State not passing a law this year, and are you concerned about future legislation?
Well, we're always concerned about what the legislature might do, but both houses took a careful look at this issue, and at the end of the day, neither house, neither the Assembly nor the Senate advanced the bill. So we think that was the correct decision. This issue has to be addressed nationally.
If you want to read both, essentially, I say both sides as if this is sort of dichotomous, and it's not necessarily, mm-hmm. but the Farm Bureau has published their memorandum of opposition online. You can also read, and Elizabeth has been talking about it as well, the statement from Organic Growers, which you can find online. Elizabeth?
The Northeast Organic Farming Association.
Which talks about glyphosate and many other issues as well. I wish we had more time, but look, we are already out of time. This is not an issue that's going away, though. So my thanks, Michael Rosen. Thanks for being with us on the phone.
Thank you for the call.
The president of the Food Industry Alliance on the phone with us, Jane Andrews from Wegmans. Thank you, Jane. And Elizabeth, farmer from Newark, Piecework, the first CSA in the area, by the way, about 20
years
ago.
That's right. It's our 26th year this year.
Congratulations on that. Nice to see you. Thank you for being here.
Thanks for having me.
And thanks to Michael Black behind the glass. I'm Evan Dawson. See you Tuesday on Member Supported Public Radio.